I am Ginny.
And I am Tim.
And we are...
The Irreverence. So,
it is the Maundy Thursday episode.
Maundy.
And I also have realized, doing editing of the podcast, that I start every sentence with so. It's a very useful transitional word. And I kind of like it. I'm going to try to stop, but it doesn't seem likely.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah, no. I'm going to try. This is Maundy Thursday, which has a Latin word.
Mandatum.
That I don't remember. Yeah.
Yeah.
That means commandment.
Commandment.
Like those of us who know that Maundy Thursday is the foot washing and institution of the Last Supper and the night Jesus is arrested in the garden. Commandment is not always what we think. So the commandment here is the love one another as I have loved you.
Yeah, it's a cool commandment.
But before we get to that, we have a Hebrew Bible lesson that puts it all in context.
In the context of Passover and whatnot.
Yeah. So it's my turn to read the Hebrew Bible lesson because last week I read the Passion.
That's true.
Yeah, it is. It is true.
You didn't read the long version, so.
No, I did. I read the short one. But let the record reflect, it's my turn to read the Hebrew Bible lesson. So I'm reading Exodus 12, 1 through 14. The Lord said to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, "This month shall mark for you the beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year for you. Tell the whole congregation of Israel that on the 10th of this month, they are to take a lamb for each family, a lamb for each household. If a household is too small for a whole lamb, it shall join its closest neighbor in obtaining one. The lamb shall be divided in proportion to the number of people who eat of it. Your lamb shall be without blemish, a year old male. You may take it from the sheep or from the goats. You shall keep it until the 14th day of this month. Then the whole assembled congregation of Israel shall slaughter it at twilight. They shall take some of the blood and put it on the two doorposts and the lintel of the houses in which they eat it. They shall eat the lamb that same night. They shall eat it roasted over the fire with unleavened bread and bitter herbs. Do not eat any of it raw or boiled in water, but roast it over the fire with its head, legs, and inner organs. You shall let none of it remain until the morning. Anything that remains until the morning you shall burn. And this is how you shall eat it: your loins girded, your sandals on your feet, and your staff in your hand, and you shall eat it hurriedly. It is the Passover of the Lord. For I will pass through the land of Egypt that night, and I will strike down every firstborn in the land of Egypt, both human beings and animals. On all the gods of Egypt, I will execute judgments. I am the Lord. The blood shall be a sign for you on the houses where you live. When I see the blood, I will pass over you, and no plague shall destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt. This day shall be a day of remembrance for you. You shall celebrate it as a festival to the Lord. Throughout your generations, you shall observe it as a perpetual ordinance." And so endeth the commandment of the Passover.
I like to think of it as a Passover recipe.
It sounds delicious, actually. Because who wants boiled meat if you can have it roasted over the fire?
You know.
I know.
Some British people, I guess. I don't know.
Here's the story. If you don't remember it, God appeared to Moses. God said, "Go rescue my people. Go tell Pharaoh to let them go." Mm-hmm. And Pharaoh didn't want to let the people go. And so then there are all these plagues. You know, there's frogs and locusts and
fire, hailfire.
All manner of hell.
The Nile turns
opened up.
Blood red.
Blood. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And the fish all die.
Yeah.
And Pharaoh will say, "Yeah, I'll let you go," and then he won't let him go. And now this is the last straw.
Mm-hmm.
So God says, "Here's what I'm going to do." And he tells Moses and Aaron that he's going to kill all the firstborn in Egypt. all the children, all the animals, everything.
Right.
Unless they have blood on the doorposts like this.
It's a good old classic decimation.
Oh, my God. You know, just so you know how this turns out, Pharaoh doesn't just say, I'll let you go. He drives them out. But then, of course, he changes his mind.
Not only that, but all the Egyptians are like so excited to get them out that they give them treasures.
Right. They give them gold and silver, which is in the previous chapter.
Yep.
So, and then this is where Pharaoh changes his mind and then chases them to Red Sea. And then the Red Sea is parted and blah, blah, blah.
And all that.
And but this is the creation of the Feast of Passover.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the defining story, God rescuing them from slavery in Egypt. And it is the holiday, the feast, the festival that was being celebrated in Jerusalem when the story of Holy Week takes place.
Yes.
So you can understand why it would make Rome nervous, because it is a story about an oppressed people being freed from slavery by their God.
Right.
In a way that brought decimation to the oppressing power.
Which is why Pontius Pilate was in town for it.
Right, because they knew this was a politically charged religious celebration and that they had to show force to just make sure that the people understood what they'd be up against if they were going to try to get any fancy ideas that this would happen again.
Mm-hmm. And just for the record, let the record reflect. See what I did there?
Yeah, I know. Nice.
For people who don't otherwise know, Pontius Pilate would not normally have hung out in Jerusalem. He would have been down in the palace that was formerly Herod the Great's in the port city of Caesarea Maritima, where it was nice and cool and Roman goods came in and out.
And looked over the water and
it was beautiful down there.
And beautiful. Yeah. Right. But when it was the Passover, they needed to have a show of force.
He took the full legion up.
And Jerusalem was a center where people would gather to celebrate the Passover. It was a pilgrimage. And the city could swell by 100,000 people or 200,000 people coming to Jerusalem to celebrate this politically charged festival.
The perfect powder keg for a Roman governor to have fits over.
Right.
Yep.
And so this is the creation of the Passover feast and Remembrance Day. This is where it comes from. And I'm wondering, why do they make it that it has to be roasted on the fire and not boiled? Why couldn't they just leave a half a lamb? Why do they care?
Well, that's one of the practical things of this that I enjoy so much. Also with like the, if a household is too small for a whole lamb, it shall join its closest neighbor.
Oh yeah, I know. Isn't that sweet?
So the idea being that, you know, you're not supposed to be wasteful. You're supposed to consume what you need and be ready to leave. There's two parts of this that are important for us to consider. The first part is the marking of the posts and lintels with the blood of the lamb to signify that this was a household that belonged to God. And the other side is the fact that you are supposed to do it all set up and ready to travel.
Right.
Which the whole girding up your loins and everything, which sounds odd, but basically just means hitching up your tunic.
Right. And having your sandals on.
Yeah. Staff in hand.
That was, I guess, so that you could leave whenever God gave the signal.
Right. There's nothing to hold you back.
I guess, though, this is just one of those purity things that I'm not connecting with about.
You don't want to be
sued? You shall let none of it remain until the morning. Mm-hmm. Anything that remains until the morning, you shall burn. Like, I don't really.
Yeah, because we didn't do that with pizza in grad school.
No, you leave it. And then it's cold and it's delicious.
Yeah, it's great breakfast.
You only did that in grad school?
Well,
you didn't also do it in undergrad?
No, I did.
There would be no pizza left in undergrad, actually.
Usually, no.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're right. So now I'm reading from further down in the chapter. At midnight, the Lord struck down all the firstborn in the land of Egypt. Pharaoh rose in the night, he and his officials, and there was a loud cry in Egypt. Then he summoned Moses and Aaron in the night and said, "Rise up, go away from my people, both you and the Israelites. Go worship the
Get
Lord, as you said." Yeah.
Yes.
So it does happen quickly. When Pharaoh says go, they are expected to just pick up and go.
They're out.
So tell us about the blood. So we understand the meat. And you shall do this with your loins girded and your sandals on your feet, because you will be just told to go and you need to be ready to go.
Right.
The blood is the sign for mm-hmm. the angel of death or God to pass the marker. Over.
Yeah. The marker, yeah. So blood is the life force all throughout the Hebrew scriptures. You aren't supposed to eat blood. And in fact, even in the book of Acts, it says, you know, there's one part that basically says, you know, you don't really have to do all this other stuff to be Christian, but you definitely can't eat blood.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was where the life force lay. So what you're doing in essence is painting the life force of the lamb upon who is sacrificed upon your doorpost to signify mm-hmm. that you are within the life of God. And so the modern, you know, question that this begs is, how are you marking yourself apart for God now?
Is there a t-shirt for that?
There should be. We could sell it.
Yeah.
The irreverence, yeah. Mark yourself apart from God. Be all in like that weird horror script that's all red.
I don't want like it to look like it has drippy blood.
Well, that's where we're going to have to part ways on that.
So
they were out at daybreak.
It was terrifying because shortly after they set out, Pharaoh starts chasing them.
Right.
And then they come to the sea and they don't know what to do. And then the seas separate and they go through, and then Pharaoh and the chariots go through and they get swamped. It's a terrifying story. And they did it all on faith.
Yes.
Now they've also, though, seen the plagues happen.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there was the pillar of fire that kept Pharaoh from actually coming at them while the Red Sea was being parted overnight and all that stuff. So
mm-hmm.
there's lots of stuff to put your faith in.
But then interestingly, once they get out into the wilderness, they don't remember those things anymore. Or remembering isn't enough to hold your faith. And I guess this is what touches me about this story, is that these same people who have this amazing, terrifying and awe-inspiring thing happen to them, this big human drama,
mm-hmm.
will be the same people who within another month will be wandering in the desert saying, were there not enough graves in Egypt? Right. Like, why did you bring us out here?
Which is exactly why they end up having to replay this story on an annual basis to remind themselves of that story.
That's
who
right.
they are.
That's right.
It's the same thing that we do, like I just did this morning, in renewing vows at, the chrism mass for the diocese.
Yeah,
so
we had ours today, too, and I didn't go. And so I think my vows, my ordination vows, have probably since expired.
They're lapsed.
Yeah.
Sorry, St. John's. Nothing's valid.
Somebody should pull me over. But there is this very human thing that no matter, that even if God was to drop down right in my office right here with some sort of pillar of fire or something, mm-hmm. and it would just freak me out now, and right. I would be like,
About two weeks from now, after like, a whole bunch of other crappy stuff happening in life, you'll have forgotten all about it.
Well, or it just won't invigorate me the
right.
way anymore. It's not like I forgot about it, but I would be saying like, what have you done for me lately?
Yeah.
And this is so human.
Totally.
It's so human. So gospel? You want to read the gospel? Yeah.
Yeah. Let's do this. All right. From the gospel according to John, chapter 13, 1 through 17, skip 31b.
And no way to know what's in that skipped part. No way to know.
No, no way to know. No way to pick up a Bible and read it for yourself.
No.
Okay. All right, here we go. Now before the festival of the Passover, Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart from this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. The devil had already put it into the heart of Judas, son of Simon Iscariot, to betray him. And during supper, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he had come from God and was going to God, got up from the table, took off his outer robe, and tied a towel around himself. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and wipe them with the towel that was tied around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, Lord, are you going to wash my feet? Jesus answered, you do not know what I am doing, but later you will understand. Peter said to him, you will never wash my feet. Jesus answered, unless I wash you, you will have no share with me. Simon Peter said to him, Lord, not only my feet, but also my hands and my head. Jesus said to him, one who is bathed does not need to wash, except for the feet, but is entirely clean. And you are clean, though not all of you. For he knew who was to betray him. For this reason he said, not all of you are clean. After he had washed their feet, he put on his robe and had returned to the table. And he said to them, do you know what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for that is what I am. So if I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I set you an example, and you also should do as I have done to you. Truly, I tell you, servants are not greater than their master, nor are messengers greater than the one who sent them. If you know these things, you are blessed if you do them. Now the Son of Man has been glorified, and God has been glorified in him. If God has been glorified in him, God will also glorify him in himself, and will glorify him at once. Little children, I am with you only a little longer. You will look for me, and as I said to the Jews, so now I say to you, where I am going, you cannot come. I give you a new commandment, that you love one another, just as I have loved you. You also should love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. And here endeth the lesson.
Who, I, God bless Peter.
Yeah, poor Peter.
Peter.
Open mouth, insert foot.
Yeah, especially poignant on this night.
I didn't even think about that.
That's why you have me.
Damn.
Okay. Where do we start?
I do have to say that Maundy Thursday is weird. Right? It's weird. It's awkward. And I think it's supposed to be. So, like, having your feet washed and washing people's feet is not something we normally do.
But and it wasn't even in those days. In those days, the lowest of the servants would wash the feet. Or you just have a bowl there.
That people
when you
could
came
do
into somebody's house, that you could just do it yourself.
Before you walked in, you washed your own feet.
Right.
So, there's that.
So
the other part that's interesting about this is the timing of it is different than the other three Gospels.
Right.
It happens a full day earlier in the Gospel of John, so that everything is timed up. So they're doing this meal not on the Passover, but the night before the Passover. So that when Jesus is arrested and crucified, he's being crucified at the exact time that the lambs
as
would
the
have
Passover.
Been slaughtered.
Yeah, right.
For the Passover.
In case you didn't see that link earlier, you'd see it. So the foot washing. Let's talk about that for a minute. It was awkward in that time. The lowest of the servants would do it. It's part of why the story from last week where Mary anoints Jesus' feet and wipes it with her hair is just also so weird.
Totally weird.
So, and today, people are as awkward and uncomfortable about their feet today. Mm-hmm. And yet, it is so profoundly moving to wash someone's feet and so humbling to let someone wash yours.
Yes.
And I know a lot of clergy people who go out and get pedicures.
It's
on
so
Holy
wrong
Wednesday.
To do that. Sorry, everybody who does
wrong,
that. But
wrong,
it's the wrong thing to do.
Wrong.
Let people see your feet in all their gross glory. That's the...
Because otherwise, you're not... It's like defeating the whole thing. You're worse than Peter. It's really, really moving. And some people, you know, when you're at a church where instead of just the priest washing feet, they let members of the congregation come and wash feet. Mm-hmm. There's just nothing so moving as watching a kid wash their parents' feet. Or, you know, and they take such care with it. And... Mm-hmm. And it's such a tangible way to care for someone. It's really moving, and it's meant to feel awkward. It's meant to be intimate in a way that makes you uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And this is an important thing. And it's so humbling. You don't want somebody who you think of as your superior to wash your feet.
No.
And this is why Peter says, no, God, no, you, Lord, you shouldn't do it. But there is something profound. I mean, this is part of what Jesus is doing. It is intimate to the point of being awkward, and it has turned things upside down. And this is what we are invited to. And it is one of the few things in the Bible that translates really well through the millennia. You know, so many of the other things like keeping sheep and stuff we don't do anymore. And so we don't understand the metaphor, but this we do. And I encourage you, if you're listening, to go find a service where they're washing feet and participate in it. Or even just do it at your house with the people there. It's
an important part of the full story, you know, the servanthood that Jesus is giving us as a model.
Yeah.
It's the fully there.
Yeah.
It's
when
so
he
cool.
says, when he says, do you know what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for that is what I am. So if I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet.
Yeah, if nothing's beneath us, get to work.
No, that's right.
Get to work
so
loving each other.
So let's talk about, right. And this is the action he does to illustrate this new commandment of loving one another the way Jesus has loved them.
Yes.
So this is different from love the Lord your God and love your neighbor as yourself. This is, I have shown you what it's like to love one another. Now go do that, and people will know you by how you love one another. And
really, it's about, he's calling people here to empty themselves out in love.
And it's hard. It's hard to accept.
And it's hard to do.
That's what I mean. Like, it's hard to accept that that's what's expected of us. I mean,
yeah.
For Peter, it's hard to accept Jesus serving him. And Jesus says, if you can't accept this, then you've got no part of me. And then Peter, adorable little Peter, is like,
well, let's go the extra yard.
Well, and I like, here, why don't I build some houses? But it's very hard to serve. And you can see how far we've gone with it by how separate priesthood is and how the way this is reenacted in so many churches is for the priest to just wash the feet of 12 people, you know?
Yeah, I like it when we do the other way. Everybody
washes each other. Yeah, yeah. It's very moving. So here's something I don't get, and I know John is your favorite gospel. This is part of what I just struggle with, is this stuff that just sounds like a bunch of blah, blah, blah to me. Now the Son of Man has been glorified, and God has been glorified in him. If God has been glorified in him, God will also glorify him in himself, and will glorify him at once. What?
It's the claim on divinity that streaks through John. You have to remember that John was written probably in a community that had very recently or was in the process of rupturing with
the Jewish community.
The synagogues. Yeah. The synagogues. And so there's a lot of hurt over that because of, you know, the general rejection of Jesus as Messiah and certainly not as the Son of God that the Johannine community is laying claim to, that we lay claim to as Christians. And so John has a very particular bent to make sure that over and over and over, Jesus' divinity, that is, Jesus is the Logos of God, the very creative force of God, the verbal force of God. And so this is just kind of another tack in that piece.
So it's all part of John's...
It's much better in the Greek, Jenny.
The Gospel of John was the last of the Gospels written. By then, the followers of Jesus were being kicked out of the synagogue.
Right.
And the followers of Jesus had begun more to assert the divinity of Jesus, not just his Messiah.
In the Johannine community in particular, yes.
Johannine meaning the John community.
Yeah.
Okay. So I love this phrase, little children, I'm with you only a little longer. That just sounds so sad.
Yeah. I mean, he knows what's coming.
Yeah.
He knows that Judas has betrayed him. He knows it's all set up.
Yeah.
The fix is in. There's nothing else he can do.
Yeah.
Aside from run away, and he's not going to do that.
No.
So, yeah.
Okay, so what does this mean to us today, Tim? I mean, what is...
You know, we certainly, in modern Christianity, like to preach certain narratives at each other.
What do you mean?
Well, certain parts of the house have beliefs that our part of the house doesn't, and, you know, we snipe and take pot shots at each other over doctrine and interpretation of scriptures, and there's not much love there.
Yeah.
And where is Jesus saying, they'll know that you're my followers by how you love each other. And so the real question is, are we doing that? And is that visible to the world?
Well, and I would say the answer to that is a big fat no.
Of course not. I mean, it's really simple. If everybody would just do what I tell them to, I'd love them a lot more. But well, it's just not happening.
I know.
Way.
We just don't follow what you tell us. But actually, anyway, the telling us is part of the problem.
Exactly.
We don't approach the world. We approach the world as if we're the Lord or the teacher and not the servant.
Instead of the disciples.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, I'm just so struck, Tim, you know, just a recurring thing for me. And in some conversations I've had with folks in the last week, I've had several people ask me, how do I know God's voice from all the other voices that I hear? You know, not just from the culture, but from your own head. How do you know? And one of the things I say is, you know, that I really wish God spoke like James Earl Jones or came with special effects. But what I use is I try to see, does it feel like love? Does it feel like... does it feel like it leads me to a place that looks more like servanthood?
That looks more for the good for the other.
Yeah. Or is it likely to bring harm or just glorify me, just puff me up? I think we're meant to struggle, you know, because otherwise the gospel stories, not just the gospel stories, but all the Bible stories would be so much simpler.
Yeah.
I think it helps us grow to struggle with these answers. And lots of times what happens is we're like the Israelites who leave Egypt and we have all the special effects and we have the James Earl Jones voice and the pillar of fire and the split Red Sea and all that stuff. And it's still not enough.
And then we start whining about wanting to have meat in the desert.
Right. Because fear and scarcity are so real.
Yeah.
And they loom larger. So the answer is there is no way to know for sure, but you have to try and look for the markers. And the markers are, have we loved one another as Jesus loves us? And how did Jesus love us? What does Jesus's love look like? It looked like servanthood. It looked like feeding people who are hungry, healing people who are sick, casting out demons, restoring people to wholeness, teaching in such a way that it opened people's eyes and made them feel free.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look for that.
Yeah.
Shall I do a lectio?
Yeah.
Okay. It's your turn, right?
Oh, I guess so. You do not know now what I am doing, but later you will understand. You do not know now what I am doing, but later you will understand. You do not know now what I am doing, but later you will understand.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah. And it's just always later, right?
And he keeps throwing lessons at me. I don't know why. Yeah. Does he think I not get it? I mean, well, clearly I don't. Later stands out to me, the word later. I think for a variety of reasons. I've spent the better part of a year now waiting for later to happen.
Oh.
So I could be back together with my wife, which will be in 4 weeks.
Yay.
So how...
Yeah, later is waiting.
Yeah, and it's
later
hard.
Sucks. We want now. Later sucks.
I suck at the marshmallow test.
Oh, so. Yeah, the one where you have to wait.
Yeah.
But, like, do kids really like marshmallows that much that they're going to eat them? I mean, Snickers bars.
It's sugar.
I totally kids like get it. So, you know what this makes me think of, and it makes me mad, and it makes me mad that I picked this? Because this makes me think of that crappy theology that says God has a plan.
Ugh.
And someday you'll understand why your child got cancer.
Let me just say, God has a hope that we will do the right things, and we often don't, and therefore we screw each other up.
And one of the ways we screw each other up is with crappy theology that says, someday we'll understand everything, as if God has a plan that
we'll understand
people die
in
car accidents.
Why your kid was just killed by a drunk driver.
Right.
No.
Or why you have cancer, or why... you know, you're a victim of domestic violence, or why there's war or no clean water. That is not what this means.
No.
What this means is that Jesus knows what's coming, and one day they will look back on this, and the whole message that Jesus was saying to them all along, the last shall be first, all of those things, the servant leadership, the self-giving love, all of it will make sense. They'll get it. That's what this is about. This is not someday God will tell you God's plan for why, you know.
And maybe one day we'll even get it.
Maybe one day. I don't know. I'm hoping. Yeah. This also reminds me of the Transfiguration story when they go up on the mountain and Jesus is revealed to them and they go back down and they don't tell anyone. But obviously they told someone because we have the story.
Right.
And so I wonder.
Well, it does have the little caveat at the end of it. And they didn't tell anybody until later. I mean, is really what it says. So, but
I always think about when was it that they did it? Like was it as soon as they got back to the camp? Oh my God, you guys can't believe what I saw. Or is it more like, we'll keep this quiet for now because that was so bizarre and we can't understand it. But later, when Jesus is resurrected, God, now this makes sense. And so I guess one of the other markers that I would say for God is when a piece falls into place and then suddenly you see a pattern that wasn't there. Yeah. And again, it's a pattern of love, healing, wholeness, reconciliation.
In light of all that, what's your blessing?
And it's Holy Week. I guess my blessing is for all of us who are a little snarky and cynical.
I don't know anybody like that.
I know. I don't either. I mean, I'm like snarky and cynical, but also the mushiest person. But I have a hard time letting myself be really, truly vulnerable. And so I think my prayer, since we're talking about Maundy Thursday and the foot washing, that we would be willing to really put ourselves in another's hands, to feel what it feels like to be vulnerable and to be served and cared for in a way that's very intimate, that we won't shy away from it. And that when we allow ourselves to do that, that we will feel God's love, that we will feel in some way that that's God loving us. And it's really, really, really hard to do. But we're invited to try this Holy Week with these reenactments. What's your blessing?
For those who think that it's their job to wash, and for them, for us, to remember to do it out of loving service, not out of a sense of pageantry or a sense of this being part of a position, but out of the love that Jesus bore for his disciples that upper room that night.
Geez, Tim, so much of what the church does feels like hollow, empty ritual.
Yep. Oof. Do it for real.
Yeah, amen. That's smarts. Yeah. All right, so thanks for listening. This is Maundy Thursday. Our Good Friday episode is episode 18. Oh no, that's Palm Sunday. 19 is Good Friday, which would mean that Easter is 20. Next year, maybe we'll do an Easter one too, another Easter one.
But for now, it's Holy Week and we're slammed.
But for now, and Tim's preaching like 5 times. And
it's awesome.
I'm preaching 3 different services. I mean, 2 Good Fridays and an Easter. But you beat me. So there. Nice work. New church.
Well, that never happens. So all right.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll see you next week and happy Easter. But
thanks
don't let Easter come too soon. Let yourself experience Holy Week. So.
Yeah. Live into it.
Yeah. All right.
Bye.
Bye now. I am also now recording, and then I have you back.
Now I'm recording because it was on mute. I'm going. Yeah.
And I have my microphone in the right direction and everything.
Oh, fabulous.
I know.
Winning.
It's my new and improved podcast technique. So you ready?